Welcome to the Amateur Fanboy Podcast interview portion. I guess we didn't really do a regular podcast today, so this is just the podcast. Our guest today, Ben Rosales, writer over at Lakers Screen and Roll at SB Nation. He's also an attorney, but if you need anybody to talk to about draft picks, college guys, just you name it, this guy's your guy. Ben, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How about you guys?
Doing fantastic, man. We're hanging in there. Just trying to get through this long week leading up to free agency. So, Anthony Davis is a Laker. We talked about it a little bit on Twitter and on everything. We've kind of, you know, gone through it all. But I want to get your thoughts here in audio form on the trade. And if you thought the Lakers gave up too much, maybe, you know, could have maybe done better with the cap space, you know, all that good stuff. What are your thoughts?
Right. I'll preface what I'm about to say with the caveat that with the way the West and the league in general is after Golden State suffered what they did in the finals with Durant and Thompson getting hurt, they kind of had to make this trade in order to put themselves into the conversation among the various contenders, of which there could be as many as a dozen next year. So I understand the trade from that standpoint. With that being said, it's not definitely not the most optimal trade they could have made, I think, on two fronts. One, that they, I think if they were giving up as much as they were willing to give up, which is the three main assets were Lonzo Ball, Brandon Ingram, and their number four pick, that was ultimately DeAndre Hunter, they probably, that package would have almost certainly destroyed everything else on the market, since the Celtics weren't willing to include both Jason Tatum and the Memphis pick, which I think conveys next year or the year after that. But in any case, quite valuable assets. They weren't willing to put those together. So in that case, even with the supposition that New Orleans didn't really want to deal with the Lakers, that probably should have been the limit of the upper tier assets the Lakers gave up, and they should have been able to keep Josh Hart. They should have been able to probably narrow the scope of the deal otherwise and not cough up as many draft picks. It's been a little sensationalized, the degree of the draft picks they've given up, since the those swap rights might be worthless and such, but in any case, they could have they didn't have to make as many concessions as they ultimately did. And two, as has been oft discussed and has caused a great deal of consternation for Lakers Twitter, is obviously the timing of the trade. They really should have nailed it down that, hey, we're going to do this 30 days after the draft. It sucks that whoever is picked there won't be able to play in Summer League, but it's not that big of a deal, and you guys can get over it, and you can take comfort that he's not going to get injured, or any argument you could have summoned. They should have been able to do that with their leverage, and it would have avoided their current situation in which they have to cough up Maurice Wagner, Isaac Bonga, and Jamario James, which, to be fair, isn't a huge loss, but again, it's the giving up of assets that they didn't have to give up in the first place. So all that being said, again, they had to make the trade. They had to get AD in-house. He's an outrageously good player, and he probably gives them a much stronger case to be made towards the elite free agents this summer. So while it's not the trade I would have ideally made, it is a trade that they did have to make.
I agree. Yeah, they look, if they were able to make this trade, who knows if Kawhi even is going to consider them. And now that they've made this trade, and we've already kind of seen it with Woj and his, and that'll get me to my next topic after this, but with Woj and how he's went from, oh, no, they're not considering. And now you're hearing, oh, they're going to keep an eye on the Lakers and their cap space. So it's kind of funny how that narrative's kind of changed now.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, Woj is a tough cookie, I think, and kind of become a controversial hot rod. I think ultimately you have to remember with Woj or any other of these guys, whether it's Ramona Shelburne or whoever the case may be, they're speaking on behalf of their sources, and they're doing it for access. And to be perfectly fair, if I was in the same situation and you told me that I could get an extra couple hundred thousand dollars a year by being a little obsequious, or very obsequious rather, to my sources, I absolutely would do that. But it's important to understand where he's coming from, where his bread is buttered, where he's usually getting his sources from most of the time. But I definitely agree that the tide is definitely turning, with the big caveat that I really think no one has any idea what the hell Kawhi is going to do. But I can't imagine that Anthony Davis hurts the Kawhi pursuit in any way whatsoever for the Lakers.
I would agree. I think now with AD in there, you hope that you can at least get a meeting and then at least, you know, pitch him and at least be able to convince him if his mind hasn't been made up. But I guess we'll have to wait June 30th to see how that all shakes out. But I kind of want to go back on to that Woj topic. It's kind of, I don't know, not funny, but as a Lakers fan, it's kind of nauseating at times how he goes into major, major lengths just to either dog the Lakers, put a jab at the Lakers, or lately, as we saw on his Woj and Lowe late night special they did the other night, just putting them into the Clippers into a topic of every conversation for every free agent. Like, it's almost like Lowe's going to say something and he's going to be like, Clippers. Well, Clippers, like it's just like Clippers has to come out of his mouth every time. And until Shams reported today on this little article that he did for The Athletic, I didn't believe for a second when he said that Clay was going to consider the Clippers before the Lakers. But I guess that's actually a thing, unless Woj's source is Shams, and who knows. But I guess we'll have to wait and see on that. But I want to get your thoughts on Woj and how. Is he on Steve Ballmer's payroll, or are they buddy buddy, or same with Ainge? It just seems like he doesn't like the Lakers, and I know he's a Celtics fan, but why is it that he goes to such lengths?
Well, I don't think he's being paid. I think that's a bit much. But what I do think is happening is that ultimately these are the places that are opening the door and are giving him access. And right. Ultimately, it's a quid pro quo, scratch my back, I'll scratch yours sort of relationship, where the Clippers and Ainge and David Griffin, as we've seen, which have at some points this summer, Woj has carried water for them. And he's carried water for them because those guys almost certainly have all given him access. They've informed him on sources. They've told him the certain narratives or certain perceptions. And in return for that level of access, Woj will happily parrot their kind of narrative and spread that. And again, like I said earlier, if you put me in the same situation and told me that hundreds of thousands of dollars of my pay depended on me essentially doing quid pro quo service, then yeah, I'd probably end up dropping a few octaves in ethics and doing that. But ultimately, that's what's happening. And Woj personally might be, he might personally just be an unpleasant person. And for the longest time, let's remember that the Lakers were a shut door to anything on Woj's side of things, because Mitch Kupchak and Jim Buss ran a very, very tight ship, where the only guys who were leaking anything would be the local LA Times guy, what Mike Bresnahan did before becoming a terrible studio host, is right. That's the only way that you ever got access into what was happening behind the doors, and it definitely didn't come from Woj. And I think one of the more infamous cases of that was, if I recall, and might have been the 2015 draft or the one before that, where Woj was dropping every pick as he usually does, and he had no idea who the Lakers were about to pick. It was really amusing that people were joking about, oh, is Woj trying to like get into Mitch's office to figure out how he's getting that? So there might be over time resentment that's built up as a result, and that might slant his coverage. But ultimately, I don't think he's getting paid. And ultimately, we have to remember, it's a very much a scratch your back, scratch my back sort of relationship, except Woj is just the, as obviously is the case, the most prominent guy who's doing that in any context, since he pretty much dominates the scoop game for any sport I can humanly imagine. I think he's in a completely different tier than, say, Adam Schefter over on the NFL side.
I would 100% agree. Yeah, maybe it's because of his issue with LeBron too. Maybe that doesn't help either. So it's just a kind of double whammy in the Lakers. Obviously, the Lakers are keeping their stuff tight lately, so it does help. But it's just crazy. It's just crazy to me. So I think the next thing I'll talk to you about. So we saw the other day it come out that J.R. Smith's probably going to get waived and that he'll be an option for the Lakers per Chris Haynes. And then Korver's also been mentioned. Carmelo Anthony's been mentioned, which I don't know what to think. I want to see how this roster is going to be built. If we get Kawhi, bring them all. Bring them all. But if we get like D'Angelo Russell, I think you can do better than those guys. But what are your thoughts on everything with all those names? Options.
Yeah, I ultimately, it doesn't rock my boat at the moment because they do have a lot of roster spots that need to be filled in some way. And most of these guys, whether it's varying levels, obviously Korver, then JR, then Melo, and degrees of effectiveness in that order and degree of desirableness. But ultimately they need to fill roster spots. And I think what also gives me comfort is that we've moved on from Luke, who was egalitarian to a fault. He would always play a 10 guy rotation, even when it wasn't warranted. And we have to see whether Vogel will do that. But Vogel is also a guy who's been very clear that defense is important to him, and he'll get on guys for that, and he'll build a system based on that sort of principle. So he might take a dimmer view of a less defensively capable backup. So, for instance, Lance Stephenson last season probably would have gone to stink high. And even Lance got into Luke's doghouse more often than that.
Yeah.
It doesn't overly concern me at the moment, especially with all these guys coming on the minimum. It, as long as they're using their limited financial resources, which is to say the cap space they have left over after signing, so say to your example, if they sign D'Angelo Russell to a deal that's $20 million a year, let's ballpark that.
Okay.
They'll have about, depending on whether Anthony Davis waives his trade kick or not, they'll have anywhere from 4 to 8 to even 12 million in space left. If they use like $2 million for JR, that would irritate me because they can go and get someone better. But if they sign JR for the minimum, I just wouldn't care all that much. If they sign Korver for $2 million, like, oh, okay, they like, you could get him for the minimum, but I won't complain too much about it. And obviously, Melo would be terrible at any price, but ultimately, I think what it comes down to is you want to see them use their cap space and the room exception and as optimally as possible, especially since this summer is one where the Lakers should be incredibly attractive to ring chasing veterans. Who that is remains to be seen. Could be Trevor Ariza, could be Rudy Gay, or someone of that sort. It might depend who the max free agent is that comes. So Kawhi might put Danny Green into play, but that sort of thing is where you want to see him get the best guy possible with the remaining space or the room exception, and then fill out the roster with minimums and only. And if it's JR in the minimum, that's okay. If Melo is the 15th guy and Bron's only doing it to give him a sop and give him a ring, and he plays 10 minutes a game, hopefully even less than that, then okay, it'll massively irritate me because probably near the end of the season, Talen Horton-Tucker might be a better option than Melo. But I won't lose my mind about it.
So I actually want to talk about Talen Horton-Tucker. I'm not big on, or not big, but I'm not like the guy that follows everything with the draft and, or well, not the draft, but like the prospects and all that. So this is completely 100% out of my range as far as knowledge. I definitely want to defer that to you. What are your thoughts on Talen Horton-Tucker and what he could possibly bring to this now depleted team for right now?
So the biggest thing with Horton-Tucker is that for where the Lakers got him, his value is absolutely terrific. He's incredibly young. He hasn't even turned 19 yet. He has a great frame for the NBA. As the Lakers posted today, he's incredibly long with 6'4 with a 7'1 wingspan is really nutty. He has the sort of body type that I think plays well in the league and makes him defensively versatile, because I think at that age, it's good for these guys. It's okay if they're like a little pudgy, but you can see, you still see Horn Tucker get up and dunk on people and make athletic moves and have a lot of fluidity, since you can always improve conditioning and these guys can always slim down. But you would rather have that over a lack of athleticism or a lack of strength, which is problematic for someone like Isaac Bonga, for instance, who competed, but very well on the interior this past year, but had kind of a fundamental lack of strength. Now, THT is a prospect, so obviously he's pretty raw, and he'll take a while with the South Bay Lakers, and we probably shouldn't expect a lot of contributions this upcoming year. It wouldn't surprise me if he had a very strong G League season and parlayed that into rotation minutes down the road, since in college at Iowa State, they used him a lot as a initiator, as a guy on ball who had to go and create shots. So a lot of his poor percentages were born out of the fact that he was taking shots off the dribble a lot. And these are the Kobe long two barrage from the mid post area and turning the corner on screens and pulling up against open space for about 17. So a lot of that. And he has a good stroke. He creates lots of space. He has a terrific set of dribble moves in the repertoire. The issue is that the accuracy wasn't quite there in college. So that's hurt his percentages a lot. So you would think if you apply a bit of Morey ball treatment, which is to say that he shoots more threes and he shoots more at the rim, where he shot over 70% with only around, I believe, 20, 25% of his buckets being assisted, which is great for a freshman wing, because it right. shows that he can not only does he have the body control and the skill to finish there, but he's doing it for the most part off the dribble against a defense and also without the benefit of a great outside shot. So it really speaks to his ability there. So it wouldn't surprise me that much, again, if he down the end of the year, if he was a contributor. But I think the big thing to take from them selecting THT is, one, the sheer value of where they got him, since there's a lot of draft nicks that I commonly follow at, for instance, at the Stepien, which I wholly recommend that anyone who ever wants to follow the draft, follow the gentlemen there who are all terrific and really analyze prospects down to a very nitty gritty science that's incredibly enervating to read all that. A lot of them had THT rated as a lottery pick or at the very least a top 20 pick. One, because it's a weak draft and he's one of the few potential field guys, but he was genuinely, for an off-the-dribble skill set, really, really good for his age group. I think we're talking, if we imagine, for instance, Jordan Clarkson, who had a very capable off-the-dribble skill set coming out of Missouri, THT has a lot of that, not to the degree of accuracy, since Clarkson was a very capable mid-range and long two-shooter, which wasn't great for him long-term because it crippled his shot selection. But right. But ultimately, we're talking about a guy who, if the Lakers had stayed at number 11 or number 12 and kept their pick, that the Lakers probably should have seriously considered there. So getting about 46 is a coup.
That's I'm gonna take everything you said for granted, or not for granted, to heart, because I honestly could not have told anybody any of that. So I'm just gonna let you have that one, and I appreciate all that knowledge that I just obtained right now.
No problem.
So I guess we can go. I should have probably started with this before I brought up the veteran minimum players. But what are your, if the Lakers are obviously not able to get Kawhi, or if they're not even able to get Russell, the tier of like JJ Redick, Danny Green, Patrick Beverley, of those guys that we would be talking about in that probably anywhere from $8 to $12 million range, who are your top targets that you think the Lakers should be targeting for what they need to do, which is obviously 3-and-D guys and long wings and probably a big man of some sort to back up Anthony Davis?
Right. That sounds that definitely sounds about right. I think my favorite target would probably be Danny Green, since ultimately it's important with LeBron on the team to win now, and Green's the most optimal choice in that he'll provide top shelf wing defense, which the team desperately needs since there's no one on the wing who can really defend right now, especially since they're going to deal Jamario James, and he could have been one of those guys who could have popped in and provided plus wing defense. So they really need someone there, and Green's a great three-point shooter, and he's kind of the archetypal guy you want on the LeBron team. But he's also on the older side. I think his skill set is one that will probably endure as he gets older, but I think for the purposes of where the Lakers are at, win now is an okay proposition. Now, what might be a better long-term choice there is Jeremy Lamb out of Charlotte, who's not quite as capable of a defender, but he's much younger. He's 27 off the top of my head. He's a very good three-point shooter. He has a bit more off the dribble game than Green did, and he was probably the second best player Charlotte had behind Kemba last year, and his peripheral numbers in terms of the metrics, whether real plus minus or player impact plus minus, were all very, very good. And he's a guy where if you give him a four-year deal, you can be relatively sure that in his age 31 or 32 season, as the case may be, he's going to produce and he's going to be valuable. And that's something that is a good thing for a Lakers team that doesn't, again, should look for win now, but if you can do both at the same time, that's not a bad thing either. So moving further down the list, those would kind of be the more expensive guys. Patrick Beverley would be another one if they can go, but he might be very expensive. And while he is a good fit for a LeBron team, his defensive utility is largely restricted against point of attack guards, which is important. I mean, you need someone to guard Steph Curry, to guard Daniel, as the case may be. But I think ultimately switchy wing defenders are the ones that bring you farthest in the playoffs. So while of course, if they completely strike out, I'm all for Beverly, go after him. But I think you could use the room exception to get George Hill, who Milwaukee's almost certainly going to waive. I think only $1 million out of his $18 million is guaranteed. And then he's a guy who's played with LeBron in Cleveland. He's on the older side. I believe he's 33. So he's probably more in the ring chasing mode, and he might be more available for the room exception around roughly around $4.5-5 million or so. And he's a guy where if you're spending your resources appropriately, Hill and Caruso at the point guard spots is a pretty good rotation. And they're both guys who are on the bigger side. Hill has like a 6'9 something wingspan. Caruso's 6'5 in height with about equivalent wingspan. So they can, and they're both good at playing on ball and off ball. So that would be, I think, a more ideal usage of resources. Then you stock up on wings, whether it's Green, whether it's Lamb, whether it's Rudy Gay, who I think is another good room exception choice, since he's also on the older side. He's Hill on 33, 34, and he's one of the guys who has shockingly been able to keep his production strong after an Achilles rupture, tear, which we've seen has been devastating for other players, and hopefully not devastating for Kevin Durant when he returns. But Gay's been managed to be effective, and he's probably in the stage of his career where his minutes have to be more curtailed, but he's a longer, bigger wing with still some shot creation equity, and he shot over 40% from three last year, albeit on some lower volume than some of the other guys we're discussing. But I think he's another strong option in this range. And then to kind of round off the talk, I think the last guy that comes to mind would be Darren Collison, who's it seems that Indiana will prioritize Ricky Rubio. It seems that Phoenix will probably is doing something. I don't know what Phoenix is doing.
In general. I don't think anyone does. I don't think anyone does.
Yeah. So maybe Collison wants to come home. He's also past 30 for the room exception, and maybe he sees it as a good way to kind of raise his profile. He's probably the most ideal fit at point guard offensively. since he shoots well, he can initiate, he can take some possessions off LeBron and still be capable off ball. And while he's not, he's a perfectly serviceable point guard defender. He's just not, Hill's a plus defender. Beverly is a plus defender. And I think, and Crusoe, I think, will ultimately end up being a plus defender at the spot. So in a more ideal universe, you'd be able to get both. But if they ended up with Collison on the room exception, I think that'd be a terrific fit. So they're definitely, we'll have to see how the market shakes up, because again, all for any of these guys, all it takes is one team that throws enough dumb money after them. It could be Phoenix, it could be Chicago, it could be Dallas, which is in win now mode since they've traded all their picks away to get Porzingis. So it's hard to prognosticate on that side, but I do imagine that LA will be pretty competitive for all these guys. They can offer opportunity, playing time, they can offer a big stage, which these guys can leverage to in free agency to get bigger payrolls. Bigger contracts down the road. And then I guess the last thing would be the Lakers could also, for their own free agents, whether it's Kentavious Caldwell-Pope and Reggie Bullock are both in the same bed, which is that the Lakers are going to decline their cap hold, which is to say that the Lakers, they're going to renounce their ability to re-sign them with bird rights, which is if the Lakers wanted to act as a team that's quote-unquote over the cap, they would be able to re-sign them to essentially whatever value they saw fit. And by renouncing them, they're only keeping the ability to re-sign them using either cap space, which they're going to use elsewhere, or the room exception or the minimum. And I think if they brought them back on the minimum, they would be able to re-sign them in 2020 using bird rights. Their bird rights would get restored and the Lakers would have no cap space, so they'd be incentivized to give these guys a bigger contract. So if right. that kind of wink-wink arrangement is there for, especially with Caldwell-Pope, since the obviously because of the clutch sports factor with Rich Paul, whether right. that might be a thing. But if either Caldwell-Pope or Bullock came back for the minimum with the hope that they would get a big role and be able to leverage that into a bird rights payout in 2020, or even just getting a payout in 2020, since that market will be pretty bare in terms of stars. The best star available might be Draymond Green or Kyle Lowry, which is not a very exciting free agent market, especially compared to this year's.
Right. So I guess how I'll end this is, what's your prediction? What do you think, if you, not gun to your head, but if you were, you know, forced to make a pick, who do you think the Lakers wind up with? Do they wind up with the max guy? Do they wind up with a couple role players in D'Angelo Russell?
If I had to guess right now, I would say that Kawhi stays in Toronto and that they probably, it looks like the cards are in their favor to get Russell. I would hope that it ends up, especially since it seems that Kyrie Irving is destined for Brooklyn. Whether Durant joins him or not is a bigger open question, but if Kyrie goes, I would have to imagine that Brooklyn declines Russell's qualifying offer and makes him an unrestricted free agent. So I would guess Russell and then leveraging their cap space to get any number of other guys, of which it's hard to see at the moment. There was a report earlier today that the Lakers would take a look at Malcolm Brogdon, which is another choice, but the Bucks are, they moved off Ersan Ilyasova using a draft pick. They're going to cut George Hill, who's a perfectly fine rotation player for a contender, to get off his salary. So they're really in the mode where they're going to do their utmost to keep Chris Middleton, Brooke Lopez, and Malcolm Brogdon. So it might take a really expensive offer, something along the lines of 4 years, around probably over $100 million. For Brogdon to get him. And while his fit might be cleaner than Russell's, I think Russell will, if he's an unrestricted free agent, his market might be cold, and though they might be able to get him for something along the lines of 18 to 20 million a year, that would also leave them with the flexibility to use cap space to get other guys, which are probably, after getting Russell, a lot, as many wing defenders as they can humanly get on the market, since Russell's not bad in this respect. He's not great. I think he's improved from the sort of liability he was in LA. I think he's gotten somewhat better at going through screens and leveraging his length. He's definitely not a plus in that respect at all. But ultimately, where they would definitely need to go would be wing defenders. And I would say the same thing, honestly, if either Kyrie or Kemba joined either. But it definitely seems like they're pushing towards Russell. Although I will caveat this by saying that I might be unduly pessimistic, hoping for to be pleasantly surprised when free agency opens and finds out that we've been pessimistic for no reason at all. So we'll see.
Yeah, we find out on June 30th that Kawhi all along wanted to stay with the Lakers, and the Woj report, the Woj tweet after LeBron signed, ended up being true after all. And all this Clippers talk, it was a mess in the first place, and that would just be hilarious. And I think Lakers Twitter would have a field day with that. And honestly, I'm hoping it happens, but like you said, probably not going to happen. But we'll see what happens.
Exactly. So I mean, it's a lot of these guys, and I think I've said it before on Twitter, a lot of these guys this summer are unusual characters and very enigmatic. I think from Kyrie to Durant to Jimmy Butler and all these guys march to the beat of their own drummer and do things for very idiosyncratic reasons. So there are things that look like are going to happen. So what I said earlier, Kyrie to Brooklyn, that seems like that's gonna happen. It seems like there's a lot of confidence around the league that that's gonna happen. But these are all guys where if at the 11th hour they do something really wacky, it wouldn't surprise me all that much.
Ben, I cannot thank you enough for coming on and talking with us. I learned a lot, definitely a lot more about THT than I knew before. Would you like to plug yourself before we get on out of here?
Sure. You can follow me on Twitter at BRosales12, BRosales12. And I try as much as I can to do content at Silver Screen and Roll, although definitely not as much after getting more into my law practice, unfortunately. But I do try. I am on Twitter and show up in the comments on Silver Screen and Roll every now and then. And I'm trying to get something out for Summer League and failing at the current moment, but I'm doing my best in that respect. But in general, I would call out my Silver Screen and Roll colleagues who under Harrison Fagan, who are doing a fantastic job, and definitely recommend that everyone pop over there for your Lakers coverage.
Thank you, Ben. Hope you have a great night, man. Thank you very much.
Yep, no problem. Anytime.